Welcome to Yoga Life Lessons.
With myself, Debbie.
Me, Chris.
And also sometimes me, Lowell.
In this episode, we delve into a teacher's practice.
Hello, hello, hello. It's going to be one of those ones, isn't it? So, as a yoga teacher, what is your yoga practice?
What is my yoga practice?
What is your yoga practice? I'm sorry, will I have a mic in front of me? I just want to sing. Can I sing everything?
You
what
can
is
sing
your
everything.
Yoga practice? I'm not a singer, by the way, but you know.
No. Well, my personal practice is quite variable insofar as there is a lot of what I would consider part of my practice that involves understanding how I'm approaching various aspects of basically just life. Mm. So it becomes about that much broader container of yoga is a path towards creating a clarity of vision that you then are able to apply increasingly broadly. So that what you begin to tip the balance of is how often all of that unconscious conditioned stuff is in the steering wheel, and begin to increase the time where actually you are responding to the reality of what's in front of you appropriately to that situation.
Your reality.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, well, yeah, of course, because it's your conditioning that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it then comes down to that. So the vast majority of my personal practice is meditationally based.
Bit of pranayama here, bit of pranayama there.
Yes. So
I'm sorry, I'm in one of those moods.
So it will always begin usually with some sort of pranayama practice. So the seated segment.
I don't know why I find that so funny right now. Okay, go. And that's all my head out.
But the duration of that bit becomes a luxury. So some of that is a sort of nicety of maintenance and kind of personal ritual and homage to the lineages that... You asked the question.
I know. Why did I do that?
Yeah, but much of it is about maintaining a clarity of access to a space that's exportable. Mm. And so, yes. So sometimes
I'm going to have to wipe my eyes.
So sometimes the pranayama is
inserted. I'm sorry.
Oh no, you've just got the mic.
Sorry.
It's going to feel like they got punched in the head while they're.
That's sometimes how I feel when you start
when I start talking. I think that's how lots of people feel.
I'm so sorry.
Sometimes when I start talking,
I think you're so passionate about it that sometimes it's so funny because when you were talking about Carly when we were in Ibiza at one point, I was just like, "When is this going to end?" Sorry, I'm not being disrespectful. It's just it's our in joke, isn't it? It's our in joke.
It is. I'm not taking offense.
No, of course. Well, because I don't take offense when you say about my lax practice. Right. Okay. I've wiped my eyes. I've got clarity now. I mean,
good.
That's a really beautiful. It is a beautiful.
It is a beautiful. It's a wonderful practice. Yes,
it is a beautiful practice. It's a beautiful practice. Yeah. And sometimes I know that your alarm will be set and you'll get up and you'll go downstairs before the whole household has woke up in order to get your practice in. And it's something that actually makes me feel very proud because you do just dedicate yourself to your practice and you are kind of a bit of an inspiration for me. No, I'm being true here, but I know that you think I'm being funny, but no, I'm
it's good that you can say it with a straight face. It makes it sound so much more convincing.
Because then it makes me think, okay, and then because I meditate, but I meditate slightly different to you. And even my yoga practice I absolutely love your classes. You know, I come to all of the lunchtime classes that I can make it to. But if I practice on my own, it's far looser.
Yeah, but I think that's the beauty. I think that what you go to learn from a teacher is the things that you wouldn't necessarily approach yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is a topic that comes up. And I think it's really, really relevant in a sort of modern spiritual context, because on one hand, we have access to so much stuff.
Sorry, is this what you said? Modern spiritual stuff. It just, yeah. Just another little part of me died inside.
But there is access to so, well, being spiritual in the modern, in a modern time frame.
Icky.
Because there is we have access to so much mm-hmm. stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes really easy to understand and even just reach people. I mean, at the moment, I'm practicing on a regular basis with a teacher who at the time was based in Nepal, is
mm-hmm.
now back in Sweden. And that's my current teacher. It's someone that I would never have encountered were it not literally for Instagram.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And certainly wouldn't be able to speak to in any way reliably mm-hmm. without Zoom. You know,
yeah.
So I don't want to knock those things, but the challenge then is that it comes back to that level of discernment, because
mm-hmm.
you have to understand that when you approach a practice, you understand where you're hoping that it might take you,
mm-hmm.
but the very fact that you're not already there means that you don't know how to get there. And so part of that also implies that you don't necessarily know what's necessary. And certainly, I think, what was the phrase? One of, I can't remember who said it. I think it was, I can't remember.
What
said
is it?
The only person that can't see your blind spots is you.
Mm-hmm.
And so this then becomes the challenge, because you have access to these potent and powerful teachings, as well as these wonderfully simple teachings, and people are sort of dripping them in. You can hear, I mean, even the Inca shamans that Esther worked with, that she had to travel to the jungle to meet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They have an Instagram account now.
Well, she is in contact with them.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it's funny when you say about the blind spot. And I have Esther for that. Esther sees my blind spots.
You need that person that says, oh,
yeah,
you're not quite where you perceive that you are right now.
Yeah.
And here is my overlaying.
Yeah.
And so you go to a teacher to understand what you don't know
mm-hmm.
yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I think that's where sort of spirituality gets really complicated then, because there's this sort of twofold argument where on one hand, what they're saying is, but if these people knew about those people, then maybe they'd have chatted and maybe they'd have all got there quicker.
Mm.
And so it kind of underpins the logic of like a cherry picking your route towards wherever you want to go,
mm-hmm.
which more often than not means that you cherry pick the things that validate the assumptions that you had about the practice, which are the very things that you're going to a teacher to dissolve in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to the teacher because they're the ones that are able to say, you know what, I was where you were when my samskaras were still in the driving seat, when my conditioning, when my ego, when my hopes and fears and attachments were steering the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, no, you need to do this now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then so this is what brings you to a much more traditional approach,
mm-hmm.
which basically says, find yourself a teacher who's where you want to be.
Yeah.
Don't take care of the sort of the foresight of the in-between steps,
yeah.
but listen to their teachings and do the practices, ideally without expecting, because that's always because it compromises what's possible.
Yeah.
I love and I quote again and again and again and again, Matthew LaCarta says, true healing is always something of a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it should be. You should sit down with no expectations, and whether it's like a slap in the face or
mm-hmm.
a kick in the backside
mm-hmm.
or just something beautifully wonderful that you weren't ready for yet.
Mm-hmm.
There's that necessity to say, well, I'm handing over this learning process
mm-hmm.
to someone who's done it.
Mm-hmm.
which means I'm going to do the bits that I don't see the value in, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do the bits that I don't understand yet, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do the bits that appeal to me, mm. that brought me to this tradition, mm-hmm. that I would consider I sort of feel aligned with. Mm. And so the more you clear out all of the things that aren't an authentic aligning, mm. the more you'll see your pathway through.
So I'm going to say something that's going to be really unpopular right now.
Unpopular with me, or
but you know, I think if anybody who knows me, they know that I am pretty happy to say things, but I'm also happy for things to be said to me. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a lot of teachers who do actually keep that connection with their teacher. I think they do what they need to do in order to reach the basics, and then they head off, and then everything they then do beyond that is then like the first time it's ever happened. And I think this is what is affecting me. I never presume to think that I'm introducing something new ever. I always know where my lineage is. I always know who introduced me to it. I always...
And that is the same as saying you've got nothing unique to offer, mm-hmm. because you're still a different lens in a different environment with all sorts of different experiences.
Absolutely.
But it is understanding that what you are is a funneling of something that already is in existence.
And also spend time experiencing and immersing into it and swimming in that pool of whatever it is you're trying to get to. You have to do that in order to understand the practice. And once that practice becomes instilled right into your core, then you can then put it out there. But I see and I feel and I have experienced people who have done these things.
Learn a technique. Don't do the technique.
Exactly. And it's funny because I see these like workshops and these things that are coming out and do this and do this and do that. Mm-hmm. But then, and it's not about you don't have to be able to do it yourself, but you need to know the journey in which you traveled on in order to reach that.
Well, I don't know if it, not be able to do it yourself, but it's about redefining what attainment of it is. You know, so if we take that into a practical example, you don't have to be able to do a sort of aesthetically, like if we talk about King Dancer, mm-hmm. you don't have to be able to hold on to your foot.
Yeah, this is what I'm
to
meaning
understand the
doing
trajectory
it. Yes.
of it.
And the mythology
but that's still
behind
an,
it.
An attainment of the completion of the process.
Yes, yes.
So I do think you need to be able to, you need to have understood the process, but that's not the same as your attainment doesn't necessarily look the same as other people's attainment.
Yes, that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. Completely, because there are just, there's a lot. There's a lot, and this is where I back out. I back out, especially social media. And you know, I've never been very present in social media because I find it really performative, and I feel like that doesn't balance. And this is why we've never really immersed ourselves into the whole social media thing. Huge. We have
I think
a platform.
It's a very tricky line. Isn't
it's
it?
Such a tricky line, but I guess what I'm trying to say is. I know that you practice with your teachers. I practice with my teachers. Mm-hmm. And so I know in my heart of hearts, that in my absolute soul, that in my soul contract, that I am completing that. And it doesn't matter what happens or what comes into the path. I know that the trajectory is there and that I can, whatever is meant to be, will be, and I can get through it. Challenges, things that come in my way, physical things, whether it's a health issue that then stops me from doing something, or my child that needs me at home, or whatever. I know that, I don't know, because it's still there. It's still there. It's still going to be there within my foreseeable future.
Exactly. And I think we saw a lot of that fallout happened with the pandemic. It massively amplified that process. Because people realized that they weren't actually doing the work that they thought they were doing. They talked on and on about yoga and mental health, and then something legitimately challenging came up and it all fell apart. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting then was who continued with the practice and who just dropped it out of the way. I mean, people here will know that when things are challenging, there'll be plenty of days where I'm like, I'm in Syria for the next hour and I'll go in there with my mala. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I grapple with, is going and doing my practice now, me avoiding sitting down and, you know, completing this tax return or whatever it is. Or is me doing my practice now legitimately what I need? So there is that grapple that, that it can be easy to be like, well, I'm going to practice and blah, blah, blah. Change will come if it's meant to be, and I'll let the universe decide.
Yeah, you know.
No, there's definitely, you've still got to do this stuff.
I'm holding my hands up. I mean, again, that's another thing that I look at with admiration because for me, when I see the blame game come out, I'm just like, do I push back here or do I sit with it? And at the what I've done repeatedly under the kind of the counsel of my teacher and of yourself is I've sat with it and I've gone through it, and that's fine. But oh boy, that wasn't in my personality 10, 15 years ago to just sit with it.
Managing projection.
And because people's projections are brutal. And I think reputations do precede people, but you know what you see is usually what you get with me. And so but what I can't do is I can't nurse everyone constantly all of the time.
Yeah, there's a point where you have to say, actually, like, now is the time that you grow up. We've done soft.
Yeah, so the pandemic was tough. It was really, really tough. I mean, you know, we had a child that was missing out on, you know, they're very important parts of
their development
during toddler ages. But you know, we did it, we got through it, and I see so many teachers that are out there now and doing their stuff, and they've survived it, and I love that. But for me, if I can be completely honest, actually the pandemic returned my practice.
Yeah.
Because it gave me the gift of time. So, and
it allowed you to return to your practice as something more more expansive, I think. I think that the important thing was that the important elements of your practice were always there. And then you understood that you were able to take the time to really bolster it.
Hey, I practiced on Zoom with Esther.
You did.
You know, Esther would run her classes and I would be there practicing with Esther. And I loved that time that Lowell could be in the corner, you know, doing what he was doing. And sometimes he would be trying to get on the mat as well or climbing over me whilst I was doing things. But for me, it was actually a really nice time. I mean, obviously, business-wise and financially, it was crashing. But I had to weigh that up with the balance.
And there was only so much we could physically.
And this is what I say to everybody, and this is always in the teachings of the ability to balance that out. And this is where your yoga practice and your yoga teaching comes together, isn't it? That balance.
Yeah. Well, and yes, another quote that came to mind when you were talking then is Shambhavi says, spiritual practices are really just like the diving board. You know, it's all well and good, but if you jump up and down and up and down and up and down and never actually get in the water and swim, you've missed the point entirely. And I like the notion that there's technique, there's stuff like you can dive in really effectively to like this clear water and dive deep down and, you know, all these things, or you can kind of splash and belly flop or wind yourself as you land in the water.
But you're in.
You know, so there's benefit to refining that diving in. But ultimately the practice is the springboard into the thing. It isn't the thing. And I think that this is, in some ways, what I was saying about my own practice is that there are many really, really valuable diving boards that, you know, they sit around the edge of the pool, but I don't go diving very often. More often than not, what I like to do is just what's it called, just like lie on my back with my
float.
Just float. And it become then the pranayama is what draws me most immediately back into that place where it stills the surface for me to float for a bit, I guess.
Well, actually that reminds me of something. For me, I think practice has to immerse into your life. And everybody obviously knows that we teach retreats abroad relatively regular. But I am an absolutely terrible traveler, aren't I? I am terrified of flying. I do not feel comfortable on an aeroplane ever. And bearing in mind, I travel to Bali.
Each year. As much as we can.
However, I was talking during a Mu meditation before I went to Ibiza, and I think we were talking about fear and how you deal with it and how you can't allow it to be something that prevents you from doing things. And then I said, you know, I love teaching and managing and doing these retreats, but the traveling is quite awful. You know, I don't sleep the night before and I have to go into a bit of a kind of regulative practice. But when I get on the flight, I step into my shaman shoes and I call in the directions and I use my archetypes as a form of meditative protection.
Sorry, I've just got such bad feelings of needles.
Well, what have I called in for that?
Legs full, leg spasm crescendo.
But yes, that is... So what I'm saying is it has to immerse into your life, doesn't it? So everything, whatever challenges you and whatever comes up, you then have to be able to know how to call upon your practice to then help you balance that out in your life.
I agree. And I think, and we'll talk some more next time maybe.
When your cramp isn't there.
It's okay. It's settling down now. It's that nice sort of, it did that like,
Do you want me to come over and give it a bit of a third?
Oh, no, it's okay. It's obviously we talked last time about just how the whole thing started. And the whole thing started as a way of making access to practice something that was simple for people and desirable and that got over all those first hurdles that were like, it's impossible for X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons then that we decided that this podcast would be a useful extension of that, because it's really easy to see it as just a sort of arbitrary tick list thing that, you know, it's like, oh, well, everyone needs this and everyone needs that and everyone needs that, is that there's so much to be just kind of chewed over. And I like the space to bring things up, to kind of chew them back and forth.
I'm just thinking about coca leaves there.
Coca leaves. Well, we can chew those as well. But then our mouths would be numb and we wouldn't be talking. I think actually talking quite fast at the moment anyway. Yeah, it's that capacity to just back and forth, and it breaks down that sense of what seems like these really grand aspirations for the practice into actually day-to-day, real life things. So maybe next time we can talk a little bit more about the dual aspects of managing something with your practice, and then ultimately dissolving the thing that requires you to need management in the first place.
Well, interestingly, when I mentioned that in my Mu meditation, one of the students listened to it, and she is also afraid of flying, and she called me over just last week and said, that thing that you mentioned, I did, but I couldn't remember the names of everything. So I just, you know, called in what I thought I could remember. Yeah. And she said it actually helped her. And it's those little nuggets, isn't it, that you then pass on, that then spread out. Yeah. And then that becomes the be all and end all, really, isn't it? That's
hopefully
what you want to do.
Little ripples.
Well, thanks for that.
Great.
See you next time.
Oh, yeah.